suck.
You suck.
I suck at Call of Duty.
Welcome to the Not Playing Podcast. My name's Rob Howard, and today I'm joined by
Marcus Hurley
and
Will.
Right, so we're 3 months into the year, and we've all been playing a ton of games, considering that we didn't really know about any before Christmas. It didn't look like that great, but we will get to those sooner rather than later. But at the same time, it's recently, well, I think it's GDC is still kind of currently going on at the moment in San Francisco. That's the Game Developers Conference. And there's been a couple of stories to come out of that so far, the biggest of which, I guess, well, they're both quite big. Basically, what should we do first?
Baldur's Gate.
Yeah, so this,
it's got
so
big,
this
biggest
was,
game of the year so far.
So the basic gist of it is that Sven Vink of Larian has said that they're just not really doing much more with Baldur's Gate, isn't it?
Yeah, which is totally fair enough. They've done an absolute masterpiece with it, and their team apparently have looked at doing some DLC, looked at some bits and pieces, and none of them got excited about it, so they've decided to do something else, is essentially his line on it. And bit of a shame, maybe they'll go back to it, but I'm sure the next thing they put out will also be awesome, so fair enough.
Didn't they just do all the DLC that they possibly could in it anyway? Like,
well,
there's so much content in
Act 2 and 3. You could argue that Act 1 in itself is an absolute behemoth. So, yeah they've put out the most fully fleshed game. I'm sure there'll be some entitled whiny crybabies out there going, but you owe us more. But
I know, but if you think about the scope, like, you weren't even able to essentially start the game, Will, because you kept re-rolling your characters like eight times.
Yeah.
So, and the fact that there were so many different arcs and so many different elements to go through in terms of the story, you are essentially getting about, I don't know how many versions of the game anyway.
That was
you're
phenomenal.
Getting any kind of DLC path that they would put on, or an extra side story or something. Something you may come across or may not, depending on your characters. You've got
100%.
It all really included. I see it as a complete sort of package already.
Yeah.
I haven't even played it yet, but that's how I kind of view it.
From what
I've heard and everything, I just feel it's solid. It's one of the most solid games started and done.
Well, my current playthrough at the moment is, you know, obviously the main quest the same, but some things I spotted that I didn't pick up on last time or have done differently have very much changed it. I've changed who my companions are, changed who's still alive. It's quite different, and I don't think any two people will have the same playthrough. I think it's brilliant. But, yeah, like I said, the story being that Larian are going to go and do something else next, and I find that quite exciting.
The only thing I was waiting for essentially was whether they were actually going to do a fully cross-play between all the different things, because it was that thing of getting the Xbox version out, and then it was out on PlayStation, and then the idea, maybe it was implied and people just picked up on it in wishful thinking, that it was all going to be it'll end as a nice sort of play together cross-play option.
To me, I see it as entirely a single-player game, so I don't even look at it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
But I can understand how it could be a wonderful social game as well.
Yeah.
But just not
It'd
me.
It'd be like the best board game you could just play for years and years and years.
It'll be
the new Diablo 3.
Yeah. Oh, so much better than Diablo 3, though. I speak from experience.
But, I mean, that game's still going.
Yeah.
It's just news like this, it's just going to not really speed me up playing for it in the slightest.
No.
Like, I just won't ever finish it probably now.
Yeah.
Like,
I think,
I'll just drag it out forever.
The hope is that even if Larian don't do it, there might be ex-Larian developers involved. There'll be people that looked at what Larian have done and gone, okay, well, this is now what has to be, you know, a proper Dungeons & Dragons game. It's not just Larian have done it in the past, you know, the original Neverwinter Nights, the Baldur's Gate games, all of that stuff. But it's understanding it can be a massive hit if done well. And now there's a level that whoever picks it up next needs to work to. And that's great.
Oh, please be like a bunch of Larian developers that get together and call themselves something weird like the Gatekeepers. just as a kind of riff on people that can't let it go, but also, you know, just they'll work on it and just keep it in check or something. That'd be such a sick name.
Well, what will happen is Wizards of the Coast will just set up their own internal studio.
And I believe so, yeah.
Basically pay a lot of money for some of the top brass at Larian to come over and, you know, shepherd it through. Because,
great,
like Death and Taxes, Baldur's Gate 4 is fucking happening.
Even if it's not Baldur's, I'd love to see Neverwinter Nights 3 next, frankly. but it's the same sort of thing, just a different area. Different bit, but yeah, we will see.
Just don't let BioWare anywhere near it.
No.
I just think BioWare may not still be a go. BioWare actually still running as a studio since Anthem.
There's a Dragon Age happening.
Oh, that was it. Yeah. Well, let's see if that sinks or swims them. But Anthem nearly murdered the poor sods. I enjoyed the. They did. Was it them that did the Neverwinter Nights games?
BioWare did the yeah they did.
They were great. It's just I think BioWare then are not who BioWare are now, sadly. So definitely we will see.
No, they have definitely like lost the crown.
Lost the developers that were BioWare at the time is my instinct. Yeah, those guys have all moved on.
I would rate them below CD Projekt even after the whole Cyberpunk debacle.
Yep, no argument at the moment.
Yeah. There was another. I did see another thing actually about that was someone saying about why the Witcher and also the Cyberpunk side quests are so good, and they said it's because they reject 90% of what the devs pitch them or the writers pitch them.
Oh, it depends what quality of stuff those writers are pitching in the first place. You could argue, you know, what they've been consuming prior to making the pitches. Oh, you know what? We should really have a session where like all the witches actually just turn into pelicans. Yeah,
I've got some rats in the cellar.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, if they could make that, I mean, that'd be a challenge really to make that entertaining. It is the classic. Rats in the cellar.
I think you'll find that Oblivion turned that on its head in an entertaining enough way, didn't they? Because the rats in the cellar turned out to be the prize rats, and you had to protect them from the lions who'd gotten into the cellar to kill the rats. You know?
God, yeah. I think that's in more recent memory for you, isn't it?
I was reading an article about the Elder Scrolls games just a couple of hours ago, which brought that one back up to mind. So that was convenient. But well, who knew it was going to be that useful?
Yeah, that's true. So the other story we wanted to mention from GDC is came out of the Unreal Showcase or something. And this one is regarding the announcement of a new game called Marvel 1943 Rise of Hydra, which is being done by Skydance and Marvel Games. And involves Amy Hennig, who we last heard was managing that doomed Star Wars project. Hopefully this one might actually see the light of day.
Mm. It's interesting, another Disney property though.
Yeah. But Unreal Engine 5, I think the big thing that everyone came away with was that they couldn't believe that that was in-game.
It was astonishing. But then again, it's a trailer, so we will see if that reflects the reality of life.
Focused in-game assets tailored towards a trailer. Yeah. You know, you're not worrying about the actual engine of the machine.
But what I would say, though, Steve Rogers. Cool. Yeah, Steve Rogers. I can't remember which one of the Black Panthers it is. It's like an earlier relative. I'm assuming whether they're swappable player characters, whether it's co-op, who knows. But at least two of the two really cool melee Marvel characters, I will call out, set in like World War II, basically. To get to play a melee superhero fucking up Nazis sounds like it's going to be a pretty strong start. Amy Hennig at the helm tells us that it's probably going to be a strong narrative game. This could be the Marvel's Wolfenstein type approach. or closer possibly to the indie side of thing, you know, a bit more mellow, a bit less gunny. Shit, yeah. And it looks pretty as a picture.
It just says it's like an adventure game. I think what they were trying to show off is...
Well, that narrows it down.
Yeah, I know. I think what they really wanted to show is like that facial technology. I think that's just like a baseline that Unreal Engine has. Mm. So that's going to be kind of like the next sort of what to expect, you know, like from...
Oh, it's super pretty. And thing is, we'll have the PS Pro being officially announced later this year, and we'll see what the others are all doing. And it's all going to look great. But I'm just interested, what's the gameplay of this? The hook for me is, you know, playing some of the more interesting Marvel characters to play, and the time period, much more fun to me than modern against, you know, futuristic robots and all of that stuff. Send me back and let me hit the Nazis.
Yeah, I did hear actually that PlayStation Pro idea might have got delayed. Well, it's going to be slightly tied to GTA's arrival, I think, and they think GTA 6 is going to slip a bit.
I don't see why they would delay the release of the console for a multi-platform game. That seems pretty odd to me. I can understand why they might delay the release of the game. But
depends if it's a timed exclusive or something.
No, it's not.
It's multi-platform. Yeah.
They want to make sure, they want to know how well it runs so that they can say it's the best one, best to play on, you know.
Oh, no doubt that, but they wouldn't. I just can't see why they'd delay the release of the console. That would seem odd, but there we go.
Might give them more time to iron out the bugs.
That console can come out when it likes, really. Yeah. It's not like a new generation or anything.
We are about halfway through the PS5 cycle, aren't we, or something like that.
And look at all those exclusives that Sony have been smashing out the park recently. Yeah.
I just don't accept that we're halfway through. I think this is going to be a longer cycle. I think... I don't count like the first 2 years of this generation because of the chip shortages and everything. Yeah. Everything got slowed down and delayed.
No argument.
Yeah. It depends how nuts the Pro is, though, how far it will extend it and how far it will keep it going, and what essentially the gaming industry looks like as well with all of the crazy shit going on. You know, if there are going to be massive still third-party games. To be honest, also, I'm kind of feeling that Wolverine game might be a good one for the Pro as a kind of exclusive title. That's so maybe that's why that's being delayed. So I reckon that's probably going to be the one to show it off in some way.
All it's going to do is just beef up the performance mode so that they can have the quality and the performance. Everything's still going to be locked at the baseline that the...
Oh, I agree, but if they've got a game that is tuned to run like an absolute astonishing mofo with everything, and Insomniac are quite good at getting like nicely tunable games, so if the Wolverine game, it wouldn't surprise me, you know, release the Pro at the same time as this incredible new exclusive and say the best way to play it is on the Pro, it's going to shift units, but at the same time, it's still going to shift the software for those that don't want to flash for the Pro. To release the Pro with no new games coming out, that'd be the bad bit.
Yeah. And also, please, for the love of God, I know they're not going to bother, but storage space with games just getting infinitely bigger.
Oh, yeah.
At the moment, you can have no more than probably about 4, maybe 5 games at a push on your console.
Depends on the games. I've got quite a lot of mine, but that's because indies and smaller bits don't take that much space. But yeah, no, I know what you mean. The triple A's, if you've got a Final Fantasy and this and that, yeah.
It's got to be a 2 terabyte as a base one or something, and then like a 3 terabyte or something, because they're going to charge a lot for it. So just finally give us the storage a console deserves, especially if you're looking to push most things digitally, yeah.
I just uninstall stuff. Like
I do. I think I've
hit the limit once so far on the PS5, but
yeah,
especially if it's a big fucking game that I've finished, I'm just like gone, you know. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of just a little bit, since we're kind of just mentioning little bits of news still before we jump into games, I just want to kind of mention the it's a game that you're probably not going to play, but it's just the weird review bombing culture still going on with certain games and things, and I've seen it happen now with Dragon's Dogma 2. So essentially, it's been labelled as microtransactions hell. However, the transactions you can buy essentially aren't required to win. They're stuff that you can get a few hours in.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's just if you have the money, do it. It's not spammed in your face or anything.
I think the difficulty is they've introduced it post-review and almost immediately upon release. So the review copies didn't have the capability or the visibility that you could buy, like the teleport stones and this and that and this fancy armor. I just think it's just
a case of it doesn't really make an impact on the game, but because it's got that label, it's immediately lined up and you've got the firing squad already, and then everyone, you know, you get the Steam reviews up in arms, and you know, most of them won't even play the game, but it's just that culture kicking in again, witch hunting sort of culture.
Yeah.
Which, fair enough, if a game is genuinely being scumbaggy, I kind of understand holding them to account. But it's getting a bit like, this is the new way of trolling now. You're not actually voting or trying to show the devs or something that you are unhappy with something. It's just a bit like, oh, we've got a chance now to really fuck with this game, and it's just open the walls now. I just think it's a bit of a shame that that happens. I mean, it's the only way that some people can genuinely show that they're unhappy with a game, but I just think it's an abusable annoyance.
I think the trick is, so Assassin's Creed games, for example, a lot of people have an issue with them, those invariably have microtransactions in the that you can buy. Sometimes you can buy effort savers, additional resources to help you level up. I seem to recall, particularly looking back to 4, you could buy like time saver packs of wood and stuff, and that was always there. You can always buy cosmetic items. It's no real difference to that. I think why people are review bombing, mostly because, as you say, they're pricks. But I think it is simply because when it was reviewed, there were not this thing, and they've introduced it. And I think it's just, I think they should be called out for it.
Yeah.
Because it should have been reviewable as, oh, look, this thing is there. And if it is, was observable and stated, say, oh, you can do this, but you totally don't need to, then it would have been a problem. I think the whole thing is the timing.
Putting it in there and, I suppose putting it in there and just leaving it to the people to find it and go, hang on a minute, you kind of deserve what you get, especially with the way that things have been on that kind of culture for a while. So,
but not, basically having a feature like that, not in the review copies, getting people to review it and then putting it live, that's a bit scummy. But at the same time, I don't care because I simply won't use it. I will disregard it and it won't affect my gameplay experience.
Yeah.
They're saying the PC version's got some performance issues as
The performance issues, definitely more of a thing.
That's the thing you should be,
I think the game is £70 on PlayStation, thereabouts. I'm sure you can get a disc version cheaper. But on CD keys, you can pick it up for less than £40 for PC. Once the performance issues are ironed out, if I get time, that'll be my next purchase, definitely.
Did you play the first one?
Yeah, I loved the first one. Never finished it. But I picked it up. I actually tried it again recently, but it was far too dated. But I did love it. I don't know why
it's the calamity system they use. They don't call it that, but it's just like examples of it are. There's a bit where one journalist was literally playing it, and one of the foes that comes in is a griffin, and this thing can appear at any point. Like, you could be midway through a thing, and it will decide in its flight path it wants to attack you.
Yeah.
If you're running into a village, thinking, you know, you run into a village and it flies over and decides it's going to attack you, it will soar into the village and you will do combat in what you think is an NPC safe zone, and you'll suddenly this great big fucking griffin is there and you have to fight it in this town. Same with any enemies that run after
the dragons
you
in
the night.
Skyrim used to do that.
Yeah, it's that.
God,
I know,
that
but
was
it's
annoying.
Just,
you were just trying to sell your loot and a dragon turns over. Oh, I've got to get my bow out again. Yeah.
It's the continuation of that sort of chaos element, as in, like, you are kind of safe, but not entirely. I quite like that. Plus all the pawns and stuff like that and everything.
Oh, the pawns thing is brilliant, and the character creator looks bonkers.
The classes as well look fun. The weapons look fun. It looks like... It's something I will visit later on. Obviously, I've got my hands full, but it's something that I'm interested in playing, so kind of watch this space if you guys don't get round to it. I'm sure you might do before me, Will, but...
Too many red flags for me, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
But it does look good.
Yeah.
I just don't. I was putting this on my list for the backlog, and then I just heard a few reviews, and I was like, oh.
I like it. It looks like quite emergent storytelling to me. Like the stuff Marcus is talking about, I like that sort of thing. When you know the thing that just happened to me may never have happened to anyone else. It's not scripted. It's just a bit of madness has happened. Yeah. I quite like that sort of thing.
But not in a kind of... In a way that there is a story and there is a thing going on with it. I've heard the story is complete and utter bollocks.
Oh, it's Japanese.
That's most fantasy things, to be honest.
Most
fantasy things, you wake up and it tells you, forsooth, go on the quest to thy place to find thine fridge.
Or eaten thine sandwich.
You know? Baldur's Gate spoiled me a little.
I don't think Baldur's Gate 3 is bad. I don't think The Witch is bad. In fact, most of the games I play, I don't think are bad on that front.
Yeah.
Because the games that don't do that, I don't play. Because that's what I'm interested in.
Skyrim lacked a story.
That makes sense.
But I know what you mean. It's a lot of these RPGs, the true RPGs, you're driven by a story very often. But this is, I still wouldn't call Dragon's Dogma an RPG in that side of things. It's an or at least I'd call it an action RPG more than anything. It's about climbing monsters. Okay, you get skills and you decide how you climb the monsters and stab them. But it feels to me more action than RPG compared to... There's no conversations, right? I think that's where I think about it. You don't...
Right.
Or there's not... I don't believe you've got massive levels of dialogue and character interactions. It's just how you kill the enemies is your RPG elements,
I
think.
It's the Dark Souls kind of...
Yeah, exactly.
It's in that direction, isn't it?
But a little bit, I think. But you do have the interaction of your party as well, though.
It's over there with them.
Yeah. But they've done it more that your pawns essentially feel a bit like a multiplayer without it being...
Multiplayer, but I'm talking about interacting with the NPCs of the world. Again, in terms of the conversations, the history, the backlog, I know there's elements of it, but I think, as Rob says, more like the Souls games where you find an NPC and you'll get a couple of lines from them, but you don't have all these branching dialogues that have consequences on what happens. It's got part of it. To be honest,
I kind of feel as though that's a rarer thing nowadays. And that's why they stand out more and shine more. Because I think they are...
But they're the games I call RPGs, is my point. Yeah. This is what I call an ARPG, and therefore categorise it differently. That's kind of where my head's
at. It's difficult to justify creating lots of content that people won't see.
Yes.
That's why Baldur's Gate 3 is so miraculous, why as I'm appreciating a certain game that I will talk about very soon.
Yeah, cool.
And with that, though, shall we move on to some games we've actually played?
Yeah.
That sounds nice.
Cool. I'll let you go first, Marcus, because you've been playing arguably the biggest monster smash of the past few weeks, I suppose, or the most anticipated.
I don't know. Most anticipated. I've been playing a surprise hit, but
I've been playing Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Another sequel, remake. Alteration? I don't really know how to describe it.
I think rework feels good to me.
Well, that's the thing. It's kind of odd. It kind of feels a bit like... it's a bit like if they remade Total Recall, but partway through it went the way of the Colin Farrell film rather than the Arnold Schwarzenegger one.
That's a bad comparison.
That's making it sound like it's a horrible comparison,
actually.
Yeah.
Ignore that.
Should be stricken from the record.
Yeah, and edit that.
It was all a bad dream
entirely.
I think most importantly, though, you finished Remake, right?
Yeah, I did.
So I'm interested in how that transition has been,
mate. It's fucking epic. I was close to the end of it. I actually had to go back because I felt as though I was so close to the end, and I basically had to do just the last boss rush essentially at the end. And, you know, with most of these Final Fantasy games, it's just a kind of hold on to your balls, get ready, limited saves, fuck you, this is going to take you a while, sit down. So I was a bit like, I'm not ready for that. So I actually ducked back a bit, which is why I gave myself a bit of time. And I knew I had a deadline as well because I'd pre-ordered it then. Fucking hell, the last rush of the original Remake is insane. Like, you go to rescue a party member who's being captured by essentially the evil corporation. Let's call them Genom Tyrell Corporation, essentially. the building they've got in Midgar is fucking ridiculously huge. It's literally like the Tyrell Corporation element. It's the company that runs the city, drains the lifeblood out of the planet to fuel everything. It's like liquid nuclear magic kind of shit. Powers all the materia, everything. But, yeah, you're essentially, you, on rescuing her, you're faced with one boss fight, then the, president's son, who gets murdered during that whole thing, comes along, you fight him, then you escape in a vehicle, you do a little highway chase sequence, and then you have to fight this fucking rolling tank alongside you. And then that leads into, and you get a little bit of a rest and everything. There's a little bench conveniently at the end of the highway once you kill it. And then you literally have to like follow the antagonist, like Mr. Anime Swordsman. I call him Mr. with a capital M because he predated pretty much most of the others. Into essentially the whole point is that at the end of the game, it actually leans heavily into the fact that you have been retreading the old game, but then you are essentially breaking free of that fate. So with the original game, the developers have said that the original game, the ending of that, is potentially the bad ending. the 1997 game literally has essentially what they said is probably the bad ending, because we don't see what happens and the city gets fucked up when the meteor arrives and everything. And, you know, and Advent Children, the movie that followed, is kind of in that aftermath of essentially the bad ending. And so you essentially go through this portal, as you do in most Japanese games, and you're fighting essentially what they call the Arbiter of Fate, which is basically three characters, and they fight similar to you. One has a gun, one has a sword, one fights with their fists. And then you're taking out essentially the large bit. A lot of people call this the Kingdom Hearts bollocksy bit, because it is similar to the Heartless, giant kind of menacing, ominous looking thing. And you do all of that, you kind of think, where the fuck is this game going, kind of thing. And then after you beat all of that, you essentially are treated to where you destroy, you fight them a few times, and each time you do, the characters get a flash of the original game, the ending. So you see like a flash of that. So it's like showing that you are essentially potentially changing things. You're no longer tied to it. And right at the end, but included in that, you get flashes from the movie that was the follow-up, Advent Children. So you're kind of going beyond that timeline. And the whole rumor was that the bad guy in this, Sephiroth, is an entity version of himself beyond the ending. So he lost, and now he's come back to essentially make sure that he does not lose. So you're retreading the original game, but he is, I think I mentioned in the previous podcast, he is trying to fuck with the protagonist earlier than he does in the other game.
Sorry, can
he's
I
trying
just...
to... Yeah,
are we still talking about the game you've just finished? Can we move on?
Apologies. I know, I'm just going off on one.
That was 5 minutes.
I'll edit this out. It's all right. Yeah. So, but that leans into the whole thing, because then basically at the end of that game, you kind of defeat him. You stop him right at the end of the game. Basically, in the original game, Cloud defeats a mind version of the villain in himself, and he uses what, you know, the ultimate limit, essentially, you learn right at the end of the game, and it kills him off, and he's done, and the planet is free and saved in whatever way. In this version, he does that against him, the enemy, and he blocks it all. He blocks it all, and essentially the game's over, and they basically just, they're on the other side, out of the city, out of Midgar, just escaping, running. He asks Cloud to help him defy fate. He does a Darth Vader.
It sounds like they've gone a bit multiverse, like this is an alternate reality.
It is, but the thing is, it kind of is, because I didn't play the Crisis Core remake, but I've watched the ending of that, because that's a big game and I didn't have time for it. But at the end of that, you've got an alternative character who's essential to the timeline, who originally dies, and he's one of the reasons why Cloud has his memories and things. He's still alive. So there are two parallel timelines going along now. And in this game, you start off, you don't know which one you're in, because it starts off and the city's fucked, and you see your characters that you know essentially look like they're dead, and you're like, holy fuck. And it's a little bit of a head fuck at the start. But it's been about a month. I'm not going to go into too many spoilers, but it's just, yeah, it's really good. And then when the game does open up and give you your first large area, it is literally like, holy fuck, this is really cool. And I just spent about 40 minutes to an hour running around ignoring objectives, seeing how far I could climb up things, how far I could explore, how far I could basically just run in this massive environment. And it was really good. I mean, I mentioned to you about the performance being a little bit disappointing. I think because the first game, the areas are generally smaller, the engine worked better, and so the character models were slightly better quality. And I think that in this one, it felt as though they were slightly worse, but there has been a performance patch, and essentially it's helped the quality mode, they call it, the fidelity one, to be a bit more locked at 30. I think it did occasionally glitch out. But more importantly, it's helped the 60 one. So you've got a 60 sharp version and a 60, what was the soft version, which everyone was calling the Vaseline filter, which was a bit weird. So it's weird because I can actually see a difference. The sharp one has improved it a lot. And I didn't actually realise I was playing on the performance sharp version. I was like, oh, that's a bit weird. I didn't realise I'd switched over to it and I was playing it on there. So I'm just going to leave it on there because it looks really good. But then I did bump it back onto the quality and the rocks and everything looks really good. Like, insane. Looks really good. I can't wait for it to come out on PC to see what the hell it would look like, because with the power of an actual PC behind it and not a PlayStation 5, potentially the game's got the potential to look really good.
I was going
to
say, if for this version, fuck up the port. This version's not held back by the PS4 version that the original remake was as well. So, yeah.
PS5 only. It is stretching the PS5.
I bet.
It is pushing this system already. Yeah, and also it comes with, like the remake, it comes with a data disc. So it is actually a two-disc game. So the bulk of the information is kind of loaded up beforehand, and it's kind of uses the hard drive to access it.
Yeah.
And you're kind of running through as well. So I've got the physical copy version.
I mean, that's nothing. I had Final Fantasy VIII, and that was on four discs. So there we go.
I remember that. But no, I'm absolutely loving it. It is nice to be back in essentially a peak JRPG. And it's reminded me, I know JRPGs are kind of a little bit of a stigma, but it's just a different type of RPG. I've always just thought of them like that.
It's just, like I say, it's an action. You're right. It's a very different thing to that category. You've got RPG, which I very much think is your Baldur's Gate, your Elder Scrolls, maybe Fallout to an extent, where your conversation skills, all of that stuff. The JRPG is a different thing. You've still got that real. It's the battles, isn't it?
The environments as well. Insane. The realization of them. Like, there's a bit where you go to this town. It's Calm. It's the first town. It's literally called Calm, and it's kind of like a European medieval kind of Disneyland style city. And you go there in the original game, and it's like a couple of screens, you know, the rendered backgrounds, and you're going through the different ones. You think this is really nice. You look at it, and you just think, holy fuck, the detail! Like, just the sheer amount of work that's gone into realizing these
villages
and
towns. You recognise these towns, though,
the elements of them from the old game. But you're literally in there. It's kind of like how you would be in a Resident Evil game in VR, as opposed to sort of, you know, looking down at it.
I would love to see a remake of 7. No, sorry, of 8, because that's where
too.
I hopped on.
I genuinely would love that.
I think that would be cool. I miss 7.
Because they would actually get to finish the story a little bit as well, because they ran out.
Yeah.
The end of it kind of got curbed.
They couldn't afford a fifth disc, I reckon.
pretty much. I've got to say, I'm absolutely loving my time there. And now that I've unlocked chocobos and everything. Oh, and I've just actually done an iconic sort of boss battle, fighting a giant sort of swamp snake. So called, in the original game, it was the Midgar Zolom, but in this one, it's called the Midgar Zoram or something weird, more Norse sounding name. And it's this giant creepy fucking snake that just, and it's weird because in the original game they're all lined up, it's the turn based thing, and this giant snake's in front of you. You can see a screenshot of it if you Google Midgar Zolom OG FF7, and you know it's there in front of you. It can flick a party member out of the action, and they're unable to join in the fight. And this one, it's moving around everything, crawling around. So where you would normally be safe and blocking and everything, it's like right next to you, flaming the ground, poisoning the area, and it does its sort of ultimate attack and stuff. You can actually just escape that by running to a real corner of the map. So you can actually, like, it just makes the combat a bit more intellectual as well. You can kind of, and they've increased essentially like dual actions, like synergy actions, where two characters team up and you learn more techniques and it builds their kind of rapport gauge and stuff. So you can, you, like, the combat has got so much more depth. It's insane. It's just so much work has gone into it rather than it just being similar to the combat in Remake, which was good. I'd prefer that over 16's combat.
So what, 6 out of 10 then?
Yeah. No. I think it's got to be a 5.0 out of 10 so far. I'm fucking happy that it's a thing. I can't believe it. 20 years after the first game and they've brought something out that not only just makes me smile and giddy, but now it's made me kind of go, where the fuck is this game going? This is amazing. It's like, I genuinely don't know. It's like I'm playing a familiar game, but it's screwing with you at the same time. So it's like there are beats that you know, but the order of them may not be the same now.
Yeah.
So it's a bit, yeah, and it may not even go to the same conclusion. So that, to me, is just chef's kiss. I can't believe it. I'm happy. And it plays good, it feels good, and it's just, yeah.
It's the highest rated game of the year on Metacritic currently across all.
Not bad.
I think it deserves it because I haven't even got that far into it. I've put 28 hours in so far. A lot of those have been sort of overnight, falling asleep, literally playing it overnight, and then realise I've fallen asleep with my headphones on. It's 4 a.m. and I've got, oh, I need to get up for work, but I could just do another hour.
In about 4 hours, yeah.
So I do another hour until 5 and then get a bit of kick till my alarm goes off. I've not done that in the game in fucking ages.
No. That takes me back to like the Skyrim and Fallout New Vegas. Fallout New Vegas was the worst one of that for me. God, the joy, the sheer... I don't want to put the controller down of that.
I do need to mention as well, quickly, that as like some of these do, it does have a really cool card game in it as well.
Triple Triad is the original and is still the best.
But this is quite in-depth. It's called Queen's Blood, and it's just like a board you've got. Essentially,
yeah,
I think it's 3x12. And it's just, yeah, it's really good. I've played a couple of rounds. It makes you do it as part of a quest, and you're a bit like, oh, fuck's sake, I can't be bothered. By the end of it, I'm like, I'm going to find some bitch, I'm going to make it pay.
More of this, I'm tweaking more of this. My deck, yeah.
And now have a second deck. Like, I've tweaked a second deck of just, like, trick cards and stuff, and I'm looking forward to getting more. And it's just, yeah.
If they get the game right, I loved Gwent in Witcher, for example. If they get a good card game.
I've heard it's similar to that, in a way. A lot of people have started, I've never played it. But it's one of those things where if they release it on my phone, I have to make sure I don't download it, because otherwise I'll just be playing that the time as well. Yeah.
I just think it's a good sign when you've got a sub game in a game that you don't care if it's slowing you down.
No.
Because you just want to spend more time in it anyway. So, yeah.
Well, I think Final Fantasy VIII, you needed to play the card game to be able to, because you had this power to convert the cards into objects and you needed some of those objects to create the best stuff. But it helped that the game was really good. Final Fantasy IX, the game didn't have an awful lot of effects and wasn't as good. It was too random. They removed too much of the skill from it.
There's a rumour that there may be a 9 remake. I think
he's
basically said he wants to try and do it. Maybe it's give it more of a budget as well, because the point of 9 was to try and revitalise that original magic of the chibi characters and stuff, the old school style.
I love 9.
And he wants to do that as a kind of passion thing, so I'm hoping he gets some good grace with Square, because Remake and Rebirth have done so well that, you know, they allow him to do that. Because Nomura's gone off doing Kingdom Hearts 4, I'm sure of it now. You know, that's going to be set in a real world, from what I remember in the trailer from the end of 3.
Give me a remake of 9, I'll be a happy boy.
But yeah.
As long as they speed up some of those bloody scenes.
8 will be good as well. I think if they get 7, 8 and 9, 7, 8, 9 and 10.
Have they even said anything about that?
I'm not convinced on 10.
Have they said anything at all to that effect, that they're going to remake all of them?
No, they haven't.
Seven is an exceptional case.
Yeah, seven is the break. The reason why 7's got a remake is because 7 is, it's almost a franchise in itself. You've got the Final Fantasy franchise, and you've got Final Fantasy 7. You've got movies, merchandise. It is a money making machine, and it hasn't stopped since 1997. It's still going. There's been anime things made, OAVs and all that when they were a thing. It's still going. People would still watch a movie of it that came out today, you know. It's if they did a live action one, it would be, God help the studio to do that, because it would be like trying to do Akira and no one's got the balls to touch that.
Or Zelda even. Huh?
That's happening.
Or Zelda even.
Yeah. Actually, I don't know if it's happening in live action.
But it's it's the break glass in case of and I think after Forspoken, Square were more in tune to kind of go, actually, yeah, we are gonna put way more into this now. Which is why the rocky start for it was a little bit like, oh, after all that build up. But I'm glad that the patches and stuff are going out, and I'm sure they'll review it and then get it sorted out as well, because I can see the amount of work that's gone into this game so far, and it is an absolute metric fuck ton.
Okay.
Anyway, yeah, that's
yeah,
me.
Yeah, you've had 20 minutes now, I think, Marcus, so
that's its
gonna
own
have
podcast.
To call it there.
So,
I think we're
cue
out of
the
time.
Music.
Good night, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. Or we can just
the
go
best bit
is
the first
10
minutes that we're talking about the the first bloody
previously
one.
On.
But I think it's important. Because
no,
it's
he's
like
right. Rob is right, because it does feed into it.
I think that's a massive big deal.
It's the cutover.
It sets up the whole premise of this one.
So. No, that's fine.
I put the remake game on my wish list. It was massively on sale the other day, but I'm never going
to
get to it.
Oh,
anytime
I got
soon,
it on play hole. So I basically have it available. I started it twice, and it just didn't stick with me. And I know it's the sort of thing I need to do more than 20 minutes on. I need to give it like 2-3 hours at least, and then see where it takes me. I just need to sit down and focus on it. But God knows. I'm not so good at that
anyway,
these days.
What have you been sitting down and doing?
I decided pretty much on a whim and after all of the unbelievable press to have a crack at Helldivers. And actually, it's Helldivers 2. Sorry, you're absolutely right. Yeah, the original one being a bit pointless at this stage. Now, it's enormous fun. So the premise is, you are a bit of cannon fodder in the intergalactic war against the aliens and the robots so far. They might bring some other things in, but we will see. And basically, you get dumped on a planet with up to 3 people. And obviously, I'm only playing just with randoms online, so the matchmaking seems fairly good. But basically, you go in, you select the galactic war, you find the planet you want to go to, you see the people that are operating on the planet, and you get dumped into this mission. And you get to bring in things with you. So I'm generally making sure I can call down a heavy machine gun and then a special ammo pack. And then you get a couple of other things. So I can call in like a carpet bombing airstrike and a big laser beam.
Whatever would you need all this arsenal for?
I'm sorry, but
blow up the things.
You seem to be misnaming these things. It's freedom and democracy for all of it.
Well, no, these ones, I will get onto that, because this is the joy of it. So the first thing I'll say, the opening introductory scene immediately made me laugh. And the whole training mission had me giggling like an idiot. It's the American corporate propaganda machine gone unbelievably ballistic. And when you're firing your machine gun into a crowd of aliens, your character shouts, "How about another cup of liberty?" And it's just appalling stuff like that. And basically, so you come in, and there's a couple of times it will just be a defense mission. You land on this bit of planet, and it says, "Right, don't die." And it will send in swarms of aliens or robots, depending which planet zone you're in. Some of them you'll need to go and find a radar tower and destroy alien nests and bits and pieces. And you and your 4 teammates just move along, call down supplies. You can call down airstrikes. But the real joy of this game is the friendly fire. Because if suddenly all the aliens are coming in from the north and you're the northernmost of the 4 teammates, you kind of want to duck. Because friendly fire is always on. And you do have to be very aware of where your teammates are. It's not just a let's all turn round. It's if the guy puts down a machine gun turret, don't get between the machine gun turret and the aliens, because your head will come off, and they can immediately call for reinforcements, and you reappear. You're basically the next version of your cannon fodder, and you appear out of this pod out of the sky with this meaty thump, and hopefully you can get the machine gun you left on your corpse and you carry on firing into the aliens. The most joyous sessions I've had are when people are using the comms, actually talking over the mics and cooperating. I think this would be absolutely an unbelievable game to play with mates. It's the sort of thing you can just drop in and drop out of. Each mission's about 30 minutes. I love it. Honestly, you could get a real buzz of working with a squad. I think it's the really important bit. You know, if you've got one on heavy weapons, if you see there's a load coming in, you say, right, I'm gonna call down. Someone calls down the napalm, but you haven't quite realised they've thrown the... You can't throw these grenades that... So, dialing back. So you get these strategies, and like one will be a carpet bomb or an orbital laser strike or a strafe from the jets or something. And you key in this combination. It gives you... It's essentially a grenade. You chuck this grenade, and where that lands, it sends up a little red beam, and that's where the weapon's going to land. Now, napalm famously isn't a very contained thing, and the ability of a human to throw a grenade isn't famously a great distance. So when you call down the napalm and you've got a few people in front of you, quite often you're about to cook those bastards. So the whole joy of this thing is, I mean, I've been blown up by these orbital laser strikes and seen my corpse fly like 1,000 meters up in the air. And then you land again with this meaty pod thing. You pick up your machine gun and you carry on just shooting at the giant acid bugs. It's just chaos and it's fun. And I'd love you guys to buy it because I think we're going to have some really good nights.
It's on my list, to be honest, because I'm up for stupid fun. But in terms of the pods, I think I heard somewhere that you can aim them.
If you can land the pods down on aliens or on... Yes, I have been squashed by someone else's pod arriving as a reinforcement. Yes. It's all part of the fun.
I didn't realise I had the first one.
Okay.
I played it once. I played it once.
Yeah.
It's top down like Gauntlet, the first one.
Yeah, well, this is first person, so it's apparently the same. The sense of humour is great. The action is really good fun. It's really intense. And I think if you can work together as a squad, you can up that difficulty. I did a higher difficulty one that I just happened to drop into earlier. God, it was tense. Just trying to hold off against this robot horde. I will admit, we got to the point where all the missions were complete and the evac ship dropped, and I got torn apart by some gigantic, terrifying Terminator robot just as I was getting towards it. So two of the squad of four managed to make it off the planet. I wasn't one of them, but I still got my experience and can therefore upgrade my weapons, buy more explosive-type weapons, and go back and rinse and repeat. I've held over. It's a half-price game compared to stuff. I think it was about £35. This is not a full-price game, or at least that's what I paid on CD Keys. I don't think it's full price on PlayStation either.
No, it's $34.99 on Steam.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's got one hell of a gameplay loop. That's phenomenal.
But also, because it's so popular, it's going to get support. They put in mechs recently on some of the missions, and when you suddenly drop this mech, I mean, I've only used a mech once, so I kind of scared myself, because unfortunately I got the mech, and I didn't really understand what was going on. I looked down and I pulled the trigger, and then my mech exploded as I shot my feet off, and I've been too embarrassed to call a mech since. I've let other people do it. I'm not ashamed. But yeah, Helldivers 2.
You were like one of those early Robocop trials when they just threw the door open.
It is a brilliant game. There are microtransactions, which you do not have to touch. There is no need to. You can buy more premium weapons quickly if you want to, but it doesn't make a difference because you're all playing together. So if you turn up and someone's bought the really good laser cannon, then great, they can help you kill more bugs, and they've spent 60 quid, which they didn't need to, aren't they, silly fuckers? It's all good.
Yeah, I do really want to give this a go at some point.
Do it, please, Rob, come on. If we get the three of us doing
it. It's just like when I see you online. Yeah. It's like, I was like, if I see you online, I'll buy it. But I haven't seen you online.
I've been mostly playing it in the day because I'm currently unemployed.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying I'm not playing anything. The Steam Deck does get picked up as and when I need a shit or something. So I've got a feeling I'll be picking up.
I'm going to be having to go away for work a couple of nights, a fortnight. So I've got a feeling I might start looking at some of the RPGs. The Xenoblade stuff apparently is very, very good on the Switch. I may look at some of those time-consuming type JRPGs, see if there's something on that side. We shall see.
Okay.
You could pick up Final Fantasy VIII for it.
I did. years ago. I have replayed Final Fantasy VIII on the Switch. I don't think I can do it one more time. Too much.
So and Rob. I basically relinquished the hold that Ubisoft Connect had over me by finishing everything that they had that I wanted to play. Prince of Persia is still probably my game of the year so far. Avatar was okay. It was fine. Made a very good first impression, but kind of I was, well, like, done
bit
with
fatigued
it by the
end.
Done with it. Yeah, so... So I wanted to clear my slate because there was a bunch of new games coming out. Clearly, I didn't get Dragon's Dogma. I also didn't bother getting Rise of the Ronin because I heard it looks like a PS3 game. And
that's a little unfair, but I would say apparently Ghost of Tsushima PS4 generally looked better. I must admit, I looked at it in the trailer. I wasn't that keen, but I just don't. I think it sounds too Soulsy for me. Basically,
yeah. So I went and plumped for a game called Banisher's Ghost of New Eden that I might have probably mentioned in the run-up to Christmas and stuff. It was supposed to come out before Christmas, but they bumped it so that it might get a bit more
It's the
attention.
One that I was insisting in a previous recording was in one of the preview things that we'd seen when it wasn't. That's the one.
Yeah, I think you thought it was.
And I also insisted it was it. Yeah, that I also insisted upon. So, I don't feel I should really say anything.
It's really good. I'd say it basically, it's by Don't Nod, who are slowly becoming one of my favourite developers of all time, having worked on games such as Life is Strange.
I never got
Me,
into that.
Vampyr. Je Sens, which came out last year as well. But they've done a lot of like those sort of like emo sort of making choices, decisions sort of games. And I suppose this kind of
feelings games.
Yeah, this does kind of wrap into that a little bit as well. So you basically, it's a third person action RPG. Probably sits somewhere between The Witcher and God of War. It's actually a much more like God of War than I thought it might be. And by that I mean the new God of War. Mm. So lots of going around sort of semi-open world areas, going through little narrow bits that you have to kind of squid your way through.
While it rapidly loads, Meaty and satisfying combat?
Well, it's more satisfying than it looked in the trailer. You've got... you start off, actually, and you're playing as Antea, who's the female protagonist. And she's actually, like, quite a hardened banisher. Banishers are basically Ghostbusters.
Yep.
In oldie world times. So this is set in, like, the 1600s or something.
Yeah,
1695.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so you're controlling her all the way through the first kind of banishment mission, prologue, and then she bloody snuffs it. But she's got a thing.
The
other guy... Sorry?
Oh, the bitch. Sorry. Carry
on. I know. Yeah, so her companion is Red and they're lovers. So you end up switching it up and you play as Red.
So that's his name. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's it.
That was
Red
a description.
Red McGrath. He's a Scot... And, so basically she's still around though, because you're a banisher and you deal with ghosts and shit, she's still around. And so she says, and he's like, oh, I merely miss you, love. Can I bring you back? Because she does let it slip at one point that she'd do anything to bring him back. So she's
and
like, he's like, can we not do that?
Yeah.
And she's like, well, we can, but the price to pay is, you're going to have to kill a lot of fucking people to raise the power for this spell.
Well, that's the thing. You've got this whole big moral decision, is my understanding about, and am I right that people get nastier and nastier and you're kind of like, well, it's probably all right to kill these people because they're kind of dicks.
They, certainly the first few, I'm only in like the first, I think, well, maybe in the second area, because they sort of push you through a bit of a linear bit, very much like God of War, and then it opens up a little bit, so you can kind of pick and choose as you how you want to approach things. And so the first few banishments or encounter hauntings or whatever they're called have been very like, especially the first one. I won't go into the details, but it's like, yeah, no one's going to miss this guy, are they? You know, and he hasn't been a very nice chap, really, has he? So you can kind of get away with it. I am hoping that they get more harder for you to do, you know, so yeah. I don't have to become a complete fucking psychopath, you know, and because the first one I did sort of worry about, and they're actually quite generous. The very first one you do, I think it's built in, you get a chance to redo it, like without even having to save it. It gives you an option. Like they go, I didn't do it because I was happy with my choice, but I guess they're just like, yeah, no, that didn't really happen. So that's quite cool. But yeah, the combat, it's quite cool. It's cool traversal. You do play as both characters and you can swap it between them as you want. And even some of the combat combos include that transition when you change from one to the other. So you can look at different combos. But the way the upgrades work is you can literally go, I want this one or this one. And you can just swap things out. So you can basically configure the weapons and the abilities how you want them to.
Oh, you can go back and rework without, like,
resetting.
Yeah.
And certain parts of those skill trees rely on advancing with one of the characters over the other. So you won't be able to have that if you don't use her enough, you know?
Yeah.
So kind of gives you an incentive to explore the mechanics and that. But nice. Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely, it's not as polished as God of War, but it's a fucking good effort. And I'm so far, I'm 10 hours in and I can't wait to get off this call and carry on.
Fair
so,
enough.
Yeah, I'm really happy that I went for that. Cool. Yeah. Watch this space. I apparently it's quite long. It's like 40 hours. But I'm quite happy that it's that long with the fun I'm having with it.
Yeah,
definitely.
Hope it stays good.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm hoping. Because so far, all I will say is like, you know, I've been going around a lot of like New England forest. And I'm wondering how, you know, I might need a bit of a change soon because it's getting a bit lost in the woods. Sort
it
of
is end. Whether you've got another 30 hours of the same woodlands.
yeah, but I mean, thankfully, like, there's been some environmental puzzles, like similar to God of War, you know, where you've got to like kind of angle yourself around, knock something down so you can get through something. Like, and I've just got a gun as well, which is slow as fuck, takes ages to load, but it just means that now
it's
there's
quite
like
realistic, I guess.
It's got like a Metroidvania angle to it as well, where like it's going, oh, don't worry, we'll put a note of that on your map. So it's not even like Prince of Persia where you have to make a note. They're like, don't worry, we'll make a note of that. You might want to come back here later when you've got a thing that you can get through that bit with. You know?
I can't seem to get past this now. Yeah.
Yeah. But in a Scottish accent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. It was just,
yeah.
That was my impression of the woman.
But yeah, it's cool because like at the end of every little adventure, you get to be like judge, jury, executioner. It's nice. Like, I've heard all the evidence and this is my decision. And that's what stands. Apparently, people do start to dislike you, though. I've definitely fucked off one woman in this village who I think just told me to get out of her house, and I don't think she'll sell me anything anymore. But
oh wow,
that's how it goes.
Fair enough.
An option to say your name will also go on the list.
You're next. Like...
I have to say though, this does retroactively make me want to play every Don't Nod game that there has ever been, especially Vampyr, which I picked up for like £5 on a Steam sale the other week.
I was going to say, if it goes on the deck, then that's your commuting happiness, and then you've got your. I'm assuming you're playing this on PlayStation.
I'm playing it on PC.
Oh, okay.
It was £33 on CD Keys, and I wanted it on Steam because I can put it on the deck as well. And it runs quite well.
Okay.
It's just running on like low detail.
Yeah.
Everything. But it still looks fine.
That's it. Little screen, it's not a problem.
No. It's not at all.
Happy days. I need to work out a way to push my Switch. I love the Switch, but I find that screen a bit too small for comfort playing. I want to find a way to, if I'm working away, push the Switch screen through a tablet so I can sit in my van and play a portable gaming system. So I've been looking at ways. It's
doable.
That was doable. Yeah.
Oh, it is doable.
Yeah, in the same way that people play Switch can push video to stream online, you need to push the HDMI out of the Switch unit and into a PC with a video capture unit. It's all very exciting stuff.
I'll
go into much greater detail, if you like, when I've completed the setup. I'm sure you'd love that.
We'll put that on the end as a bonus
feature. Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah, bonus feature. Yeah, nice. I just mentioned quickly one more game I played that is because it's just relevant because it's a bit zeitgeisty is Balatro.
The poker ones.
Yeah, you're basically building up hands of poker hands. And in between, there's like three rounds, or there's three blinds in each round, and each one ups the ante slightly, so you've got to get a higher score. But you, in between each blind, you get to go to a shop, and you can buy these planet cards that upgrade sort of each power kind of hand.
Right.
So you'll get a multiplier on, like, if you get three of a kind or a flush or a straight. Right. So you're upgrading those, and then you've got upgrading the cards that you've got in your deck. And also you're getting these jokers that all sit on like this little deck at the top of the screen. And these jokers do wildly different things. So like, and you'll end up wanting to like build your sort of engine around what bonuses and perks you've got. And it's just about getting as far as you can. And it's great fun. And you can play it on the train or on the loo, or, you know, it's great when you've got just a funny, you know, just at a loose end, you know, like, it's like all these rogue, like deck builder things. You just keep going as long as you can, and then you die, and then you just move on and do something else.
I must admit, I'm getting very fatigued by Slay the Spire. I seem to be playing it too much now. I've decided to try and walk through on the higher difficulty levels, but yeah, I need to find something else. So maybe that's the one.
Steam currently have a, it's called like a deck building festival. That's it, Deck Builders Fest, and they're doing all like, because there's so many of these now.
Yeah, but I don't play these on a PC, if you see what I mean. I'd play them on a portable or on my phone is the way to go. So unless I flash out for a Steam Deck, that's probably not going to be my direction.
This is the synergy that I've discovered, like, since getting the deck, is that I'm like, oh, I can get a deck builder for that and a deck builder for that. I quite fancy playing a deck builder, but in space. Oh, there's like 200 of them.
Yeah. which ones of them are good, though? That's the trick.
Yeah. It's Wild Frost is the one that's at the top of the tree here for me, because it's on my wish list.
Well,
I've heard that one's quite good. And that looks like one that's in the snow.
Well, that's quite the differentiator. Builder. It's no deck builder, is it?
Yeah, I have actually got a space one, and I've got like a D&D one, and I've got just a straight poker one now. Oh no! Noise! Sorry. Whoops. It's a trailer for something. But yeah. Yeah, I think that's about all I've got, really. Don't know about you guys. I went a bit nuts for the June board game, digital version of that went online the other week, but that's just because I'm really into June at the moment.
Off the back of the films. Movie as well, isn't it? You're riding that euphoric rave. Yeah.
I've never read the books, not say the films. Not enough shit's given in this household, I'm afraid.
No, I know. It's certainly another one.
But
it's
I do like Tremors. Yeah, I do like Tremors, and I understand they're quite similar.
It's less rednecky Tremors.
Yeah.
Bigger worms.
She will have long blonde hair, green eyes, and legs to go all the way up. I believe is a June.
Well,
quote.
But if it was June, it would be blue eyes.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
And legs to go all the way up.
Oh, maybe
it was
blue eyes. Maybe the green eyes came from Big Trouble in Little China. Who knows?
Certainly another sci-fi for you to not give a fuck about.
Oh, yes.
Although it's not brown, it's more sandy colour mostly. So,
it's all a bit orange.
Yeah. I do have one game, sort of like an honorary mention. I think possibly two podcasts ago, or maybe the last one, I did mention Hogwarts Legacy.
Oh, yeah.
My other half has been playing it, but I have actually played a chunk of it
that
myself.
That was one of the biggest selling games of last year, wasn't it?
Yeah. I can, yeah. It's fucking hell. They have put work in, those developers. I think I was singing their praises for the world building they've achieved. Mm. You do feel like you're in the world. And I had no idea the Hogwarts castle itself was so fucking massive. So Susie's finished it. And sort of like as observer of that, I've got to say, it's a damn good game. If you're a fan of it,
nope.
If you're a pseudo fan of the world,
nope.
You'll enjoy it. If you're the more of a fan you are, essentially that just exponentially increases.
Yeah.
However, it's not a game that sort of is carried by that. The combat mechanics in it are actually really good.
Mm.
You've got like a shield option, so you do wizard combat with wands and stuff, and you can learn like killing spells and stuff like that. So you can choose to do that. You've got dialogue options as well that kind of mold your character and how people react to you. So you could choose to be nicer, or you could choose the more nasty Slytherin style sort of thing. And you could choose your, I don't think your house matters too much, but it depends on where you are and who you're immersed with, in terms of that story sort of thing.
Do you get to actually shout, "You're a lizard, Barry," I think was the line.
No, because it's set, I think, 50 years before the films.
Oh, okay.
I think it's 50 years. It might be 200 years. I'm not sure. It's a big gap between those two numbers, I know.
It's from the olden days.
Yeah, it's pre. So you do get mounts to fly around on and stuff like that, and you get brooms. And it's insane because at any point outside, you can just call your broom, hop on and fly up.
Nice.
And you are flying around this world.
Okay, it's like summoning, a mount, but with up as well.
It's huge. Yeah. The area you can go around is massive, absolutely massive.
Cool.
What's the sensation of flying like? Because that was one of the things that really disappointed me with Avatar, was that you're flying and then you're just like, it's just like, you don't really feel like you're going very fast. It's just that was a bit shit.
It's real odd because it's hard to tell because the area is big and the area's out thing. So you can fly sort of at tree level. And obviously it looks a bit faster because you've got the trees going by kind of thing.
But when
it's harder to tell. But when you got the distance-o-meter going, compared to like when you're on a mount, like a, what's it called? I can't remember what it's called now. The eagle horse type thing.
In Avatar, they're called Ikrans.
You're
talking about Pegasus, right?
Kind of, but it's like an eagle bird thing.
Like a griffin.
Yeah, I can't remember what they're called. It's annoying me.
Oh, careful. Make sure safe search is turned off when you do Mount Harry Potter.
Yeah. Hippogriff, that's it.
Hippogriff.
They're really cool. They're like literally an eagle horse type thing, like a eagle griffin sort of thing. But they look really cool. You do get around to that, and you actually take classes to learn bits. And the classes aren't necessarily boring. They're like abbreviated. So you go and attend a class as a quest.
You're at school, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. It does exactly the same thing the films does. You're in the class only for the element that kind of advances the story or your own adventure. So you're in a class, you get a montage of them doing stupid things and you have to brew a potion or something, and that's the activity. And then afterwards the class is kind of done, and then you speak to the teacher about their past and things. And loads of characters have got so much backstory that you can choose to go. A lot of it you have to go through, but it feels as though you're just learning more and more about the people, and some bits of it tie together and you kind of go, maybe that's because of that. And it doesn't always hold your hand with it, but not in a kind of annoying way. But there is a very good story going through as well.
Like, fancy it.
There's so many bits that are like lore specific. I think I mentioned last time at the start, someone dies when you're basically going towards Hogwarts, and the coach is basically drawn by these things that you can only see if you've seen death or been close to death, and you can't see them for the whole sequence up until a person dies by being chomped by a dragon, and then in the next scene you can see them because the person has been murdered horribly in front of you, and then you can see them permanently through the entire game. And I was like, that is a nice little touch. They don't really mention that apart from later on. And then there's loads of things as well. There's poachers to take out and all that. There's an absolute metric fuck ton of spiders though, so if you have arachnophobia can get a little bit jarring. And it does have an arachnophobia mode where it turns them into these kind of weird multi-ball. Jobs. Yeah, kind of like that. And the feet are just disembodied sneakers.
Yeah.
So it's like it throws you out of it because it's not designed to freak you out. You can deal with everything else. But if you genuinely have arachnophobia, you have an arachnophobia.
Well, at least
mode.
It's considerate.
Yeah. Yeah. And only
is it suitable? Is it suitable for not necessarily little children, but you know, is it family friendly?
I don't know. I'd say it's as much as the films are.
12.
Because
I think some of the films aren't.
It does get dark, like the whole Crucio, like the kind of torturing curse and stuff when you do that, and you got a choice at one point. You get choices whether to do things to people or not, or. You know, it's literally almost a bit like a school simulator, a bit like it is the world the way that the films are, essentially. But you're in there.
Well, my kids play goat simulator, really good. And they have the choice to headbutt people off of buildings. So
yeah,
what can you say?
I mean, it's one game I will go back to after I've done like the Final Fantasy kind of things. So I will pick it up, even though I've seen Suze complete it. You can still go around,
and
you can still
fly
around and do things afterwards. Yeah. I just think they've done so much. It's one of those things where I feel it's a shame when you do reach the limits of the area, like all the villages and everything, you kind of want more. You reach the edge of it, you kind of, I wish there was more. I wish there was another continent. I wish I could go further, like a new game expanded plus or something. That, you know, you get these old games like Guild Wars where you've got the map and it's this story, and then you essentially get an expansion and it triples the world.
You wish
for something like that. And you kind of go, oh, if only. But
well, unfortunately, because this is Warner Brothers, and they appear to be doubling. We'll finish on this news piece, right? So Warner Brothers appear, despite Suicide Squad clearly being quite a flop, maybe not as huge a flop as it could have been, because people will buy it based on the name, but a massive failure and. Arkham Knights. Was it Arkham Knights or Gotham Knights? I can't remember.
Gotham Knights.
Gotham Knights. Again, failure, live service game. This Hogwarts one being one of the best-selling games or the best-selling game of last year, they've confirmed that they're doubling down on this live service stuff. Yeah. So it just shows you people maybe paid a lot of money, but they're clearly sometimes thick as pig shit.
However, the problem is they've also doubled down on just live service games and mobile gaming.
Yeah.
So they're turning their back on standard video gaming, which
that's fine.
Another...
It just means it's less shit to have to play.
But Batman games. Good ones.
But also, NetherRealm Studios are in a bit of a pickle now because they've been bought by and Mortal Kombat, one of the biggest IPs.
Oh, of course, yes.
It's hanging in the balance now. There may never be another actual Mortal Kombat game for another 10 years until that studio is released or whatever.
Yeah, well,
because they can't buy the IP.
Warner
Brothers will never let that go.
Yeah,
and essentially you're just going to get horrible mobile games and games of service related to Mortal Kombat, and that game has made so much. The last two versions and stuff, 11 and 1, the remake. They make so much money from the casual market. It's those games aren't about the hardcore gamers.
No.
They're about everyone knows the Mortal Kombat license.
Yep.
And so many people pick it up, even if you're good at it or not. It's people just buy it. It's kind of like Tekken. It's, well, less actually. They've really shot themselves in the foot with this, and NetherRealm are just dumbfounded.
That's it.
They don't know where they're going with it. So all of those games, potentially like the Injustice games, which were like the Mortal Kombat ones, but with a DC skin, basically DC characters, there may not be another one of those. There was rumours of Injustice 3. Mortal Kombat is basically just kind of on ice. There was talk of possibly an expansion to the Mortal Kombat 1, because they did a Mortal Kombat 11 Armageddon or something like that. They did an expansion to it, and it sold like absolute... you know, hotcakes.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, the idea is that they was obviously going to do the same thing with this. Now this news has come out, and it's like head office is basically, it's what happened with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
That's
when it first came out, and then Winter Soldier came out and basically nuked S.H.I.E.L.D. and they went, fuck. So who knows what's going on, but I'm keeping my eye on that kind of space to see what's going on. Because Warner Brothers seem to be having an issue even with their shows. They seem to be having some sort of crisis going on where they're sort of dismantling everything.
Hopefully they'll get some new leadership because there's clearly people at the top are useless.
Succession is happening at the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
It's crazy. Anyway, yeah.
Happy days.
Yeah.
Cool. It'll be interesting to see what we've played next month. I suspect Marcus may still be on Final Fantasy.
I will be.
I fancy Dragon's Dogma. I really do. I just don't know if I'm going to get the time and money.
It's on my list. It's on Helldivers, I think I'm going to pick up before. Oh,
please do. I'd love you to join me.
Because that's going to be a good parallel game.
Yeah.
That's a dip in
if people are around. Thing is, if we could eat less, let's even see if we can get a few people on a bit of a chat and just say, right, anyone Helldiversing, let's hop in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll totally have a piece of that if it's happening.
Let's do it.
I'll
dive in too.
Now, my plan is to finish Banishers and get back to Baldur's Gate 3. I was just trying to see how the whole thing would shake out with Rise of the Ronin, and I think I can safely say that's one for the back burner.
Steam sale
or PSN sale, but probably the next game I buy will be the Hellblade 2, but that's not for a little while.
Cool.
Alright then,
that's
call it there once again. Thanks for listening to the Not Playing Podcast. You can email us at notplayingpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet at or follow us on Twitter at notplayingpod. And if you like what you've heard here, please do leave us a review. Anyway, that's all for now. Until next time, bye. I'm inclined to agree, 'cause I suck. You suck. I suck at calling.